always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. It is Thursday, Thunderdome Thursday. That means it's Friday Eve. Welcome to the big program here on June 13th, almost mid-June of 2024, rocketing towards the August primary here in the state of Missouri and the November general, which will be nationwide. Thanks for joining the program. I'm Tim Jones. Chris Harp's here as well, of course.
June 13th, five, 6 weeks left until the primary elections in August, which are August 6th.
August the 6th.
This year,
Tuesday,
I think.
August the 6th. I think as of next Tuesday, we will be 49 days out.
49 days out. I was listening, as I always do, to Mike Ferguson in the morning and with Gabe and Stell, and heard a big announcement on his show. Our good friend, former state senator Bob Onder, received the Missouri Right to Life endorsement for his congressional bid, which is a huge, huge deal for him. A lot of things going on, Tim.
Absolutely, indeed. Big national headlines, Chris. Joe Biden says, don't you worry yourself about those giant Russian warships floating 30 miles past the coast of Florida. Nothing to see here. As Donald Trump, Chris, to borrow a phrase from Donald Trump, peacefully and patriotically was back at our nation's capital today, visiting with Republicans. And for all that international news of the day, we're going to be speaking with Steve Bucci. What a perfect day to have Steve Bucci on, as all eyes are on the Caribbean between Florida and Cuba with this Russian flotilla. My speaker stump speech is going to be based a little bit on that story and a little bit on a lot of stories. I'll get to that in just a second. Steve Bucci, Chris, will be speaking with him about the Israeli-Hamas ceasefire negotiations, the Russia flotilla just off the coast of the United States of America, Zelensky's visit with Joe Biden at the G7. What does this 10-year executive order quasi-treaty thing mean? We've got a lot to talk with Steve Bucci about, don't we?
We do, we do. And big news, we talked about it a little bit. I got a picture with Eric Schmidt in back of me. Yesterday was the congressional baseball game. Tim, obviously the Republican side has all of the athletes on their side. They won 31-11.
Wow!
Beat the Democrats yesterday. August Pfluger, Republican from Texas, hit a in the park. Home run, three-run home run.
Wow.
So this is the second year in a row that the Republicans have drubbed the Democrats. Of course, whenever you have a big spectacle like this, the crazies come out and feel that this is the best time to give their cause some attention.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we had it last night at the game.
Happened?
Cut one, Joey.
Several protesters were arrested last night after running onto the field during the congressional baseball game in Washington, D.C. This happened during the second inning in Nationals Park. Capitol Police officers tackled the guys, took eight protesters into custody. The group wore T-shirts that read, End Fossil Fuels. The annual charity baseball game features Democrats and Republicans from the House and Senate.
Now, Tim, I have a whole lot of respect for them if they attended the baseball game last night and they got there in EVs.
If they got to the game
in gasoline electric cars, I've lost little respect for them that I have, which is zero already.
Shouldn't they have taken scooters
instead
or
of a
something?
Lime bike or something?
Yeah, that's a good. That's a great question. What was their carbon footprint in getting to the game? Any news on what Missouri's junior senator did in the ball game? Eric Schmidt, huge baseball guy, good athlete.
He is. I didn't see any highlights or anything, okay. So I didn't. I don't think he got a hit or did anything spectacular. But last year, what was it? I think he got a hit or he threw somebody out from the outfield. So Senator Schmidt played baseball at Northeast Missouri State University.
Mm-hmm.
Now Truman University, so he's got a background. And what they really need him for, they need a congressional basketball game, because I'm sure he would be the center for the Republican side.
Or volleyball. You know, he would do well in that, too. I can imagine the smashing serve he would deliver. So...
just imagine that, though. Fetterman on one side of the net.
Yes.
And Schmidt on the other side. Who do you think's more athletic?
Schmidt.
Yeah, I think Schmidt. So, too.
But Fetterman's a big dude. He's a big dude. He could probably play a big, like, boxy center.
He's lumbering, though. He's got no feet.
He would kind of lumber up and down the court.
I think they said he's at fault for that car accident.
Yeah, I saw that. I've got that in my notes, that he was distracted, and he will pay attention next time.
Next time. Exactly. I imagine him popping out of the sunroof when he hits a car, just like he's so tall, the car can't contain him.
While we're giving you the sports report, the U.S. Open, the men's golf championship, is being held as we speak. They're about to wrap up round one. That is in beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. I've actually gotten to play at Pinehurst. It's a beautiful tract of land. Pinehurst itself, I mean, this is the golfer's mecca. Pinehurst itself, that complex has 7 golf courses. And then around Pinehurst, there's a ton of other famous courses as well. So there you go. Scottie Scheffler, of course, in that tournament. And, I don't know if we mentioned this. All charges against Scottie Scheffler for that Louisville incident were dropped 2 weeks ago. Excellent. So a little bit of roundup on that. Chris's Corner will be brought to us today
at
4:45 p.m.
More Biden news. When it rains, it pours, and some polling news along with that as well.
That's at 5:07. I was inspired today to proclaim a speaker's stump speech under the mantra of something that has been, that the Vic Porcelli show has made famous, the Ed Stoic principle. Everything Democrats say, the opposite is true. We can also say everything liberals say, the opposite is true. Everything the media says, the opposite is true. So I'm going to give you a couple examples of that. One of those is going to be regarding the reporting of these Russian ships that are barely, that are less than 100 miles off of our coastline. I also have another one regarding the Hunter Biden laptop. So the way the media has treated these stories this week, when you look at different media sources on this, you would think you were on two different planets. The truth has got to either be one or the other. So we'll talk about that at 5:07. At 5:25, we're going to speak with our good friend Chris Stegall. He's back with us today from the Herzog Foundation, the host of the podcast Making the Leap. We're going to talk about a lot of great topics up at readlion.com, which is the online publication of the Herzog Foundation, including the fact that Chris has a new podcast coming out this Friday with Kirk Cameron. And he's going to be traveling. Chris is not, I don't know if Kirk's going with him or not, but Chris is going to be heading to Omaha, Nebraska later this week to join the Take Back Title IX summer bus tour. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a great prerogative.
It does. Mm-hmm. Kirk Cameron. I was a little old for the television show that he was on. What was the name of it, Joey?
Growing Pains.
Growing Pains. I was a little old to watch Growing Pains, but he was a huge star back in the day. Had that goody-two-shoes kind of demeanor about him, and obviously it must have been genuine because he's a born-again Christian, has walked away from Hollywood a little bit. He does more religious-style projects now, and looking forward to talking to Chris Stegall about his conversation with Kirk Cameron.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. His sister was also on Full House. Were you too old for Full House?
I was.
Okay. You're not TGIFing like the rest of us. I was. TGIFing.
Look, those are 80 shows. Mm-hmm. I graduated high school in 84, so I was at that age where I was kind of too old for Growing Pains and Full House and all.
Give me
that.
Some welcome back cat.
Exactly. You know, Tim, the other big story today, and I want to ask you about it because you're the attorney, of course. Cut to Joey.
You surprised me, Chris.
I'm sorry.
I'm stalling until you're supposed to be on that stuff. I know. I'm the worst. Here we go. Cut to. It's going to be a good one.
The Supreme Court has just issued a major ruling on abortion in this country, the most consequential since Roe versus Wade was overturned 2 years ago. Now, this case concerns the availability and access to the abortion pill mifepristone. Just moments ago, the court ruling unanimously to maintain availability.
The Supreme Court says this kind of case, brought essentially by activists rather than physicians who are treating this issue with this drug, is not enough to get you into federal court and make a claim. It is essentially keeping the action in the courts limited to people who genuinely are impacted by this.
So, Tim, it's my understanding they didn't rule on the Mifepristone case per se. They ruled that the people that brought the case, the plaintiffs, didn't have standing. For all us non-lawyers out there, explain to us what that means.
That means it's a case that has not been ruled on the merits. They did not decide the central question posed to the court as to whether access to this abortion drug, this alleged abortion drug, should be limited or not. So they did not even get to that because they said the plaintiffs did not have standing. So the case was basically dismissed for lack of standing. So anybody who says, oh, the abortion advocates won or the pro-life advocates lost is wrong, prima facie, because no one won or lost in a sense that the elements of the case were not addressed. Now, I would say this. I think Democrats and the left honestly lost on this case because now The current access is held. There's not going to be another case on this that's going to get decided before the election. So what are you going to run on now, Democrats? Yeah, if the advocates had won on this, that would have been a great decision. But then there would have been a lot of fear mongering by the left trying to get their voters to the polls in November. How are they going to fearmonger this?
They got one more case, Tim. I'm glad you brought that up. Apparently, the court's going to be ruling on another major abortion case. It's regarding Idaho's abortion law and the federal law requiring emergency medical treatment. That is a case that is before the court. So if the pro-choice people lose that one, then they're definitely not going to have much to run on in November about this. What do you think? I know, you know, Zach is our expert and everything, but just from the surface of this, what do you think about this case?
About the Mifepristone?
Idaho has a strict abortion ban, and it has to do with the emergency medical treatment. Apparently, there's a conflict there that the Supreme Court is trying to work out. Yeah. I hate to throw you on the spot
I'm going
to
be honest. Yeah. I don't know anything about it. Yeah. I know nothing about the Idaho case. My question is will that ruling be limited to Idaho, or will it have any application for the rest of the country? If it's a case limited to Idaho, as a Republican, I don't worry about it because guess what? Idaho is going to vote for Donald Trump and for every Republican no matter what. So if that case doesn't have national implications, although I would assume it's got some national implications, otherwise the Supreme Court wouldn't take it. As to the Mifepristone case, Chris, that issue is not settled now, right? Because what's going to happen is the people that brought that case, they're now going to look for someone who might have standing.
That's what I heard.
But it's going to take a long time. It could take years for that to get back up to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. So the abortion advocates are going to celebrate this today because the headline, which is appropriate, I'm not going to say, It's factual for them to say the Supreme Court upholds FDA approval of the abortion pill Mifepristone, but it was not upheld on the merits. Mm-hmm. So for the moment, you know what's happened? Nothing. The status quo has been basically maintained. So the left, in a way, loses that argument politically for this November, but the right will try to bring that case back at some point, but it won't be for several years down the road. It takes a long time for a case to wind its way to the Supreme Court, unless we have a case like Trump being kicked off the ballot in Colorado, which was fast tracked.
And the court ruled also yesterday with Starbucks in an 8-1 ruling will make it tougher for union organizers and the NLRB, which is a good ruling for those of us on the conservative side. And they voted unanimously, Tim, that the phrase "Trump too small" can't be trademarked.
Interesting.
That's what the court
ruled. Hey, tell me more about that Starbucks case. What were they? Were they trying to unionize, and the court would not uphold the unionization?
I think so. And then
that's a very interesting case.
And because it also mentions the union or the National Labor Relations Board, that it's a setback for them. I should have dived more into it, but that makes it more interesting as well. That both of them were dealt a setback.
How interesting, Chris, is it? Because we've talked about this concept. We've talked about this battle for a while. How interesting is it that a very liberal company like Starbucks has been fighting the unionization of its employees for years now? Isn't that interesting?
Now what about the ruling? 8-1. That's almost unanimous.
Do you know who the decider was?
I have no idea.
That's
if I had to guess, I would think it is
Kagan.
No, it was the sister. Jackson Brown, Katani.
Yeah, you know what happens when
I bet you it's her.
You know what happens when Vic Porcelli says Jackson Brown? You know what happens when that happens?
What's that?
I don't know if Joey's got that song anywhere in his catalog, but Vic will screw up her name all the time. I think sometimes on purpose. Mm. And then they play Running on Empty.
Running on Empty. Yeah.
So, no, Ketanji Brown, you're probably right. I'll look that up.
I will put money down on it.
There's
was
Ketanji.
Probably her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Run it on him.
Aren't we evil? Chris, that's an interesting case, and I think it's fascinating. Isn't it great? So what do Democrats do? What does the left do when their favorite coffee company, their favorite liberal coffee company, is fighting unionization? It's like, does your head explode, or like what happens to you? Yeah. You know? So now that's you know what, Chris? That's a great case. That's a great result, honestly, for workers who don't want to be forced into unionization.
And that's
going
to be one of those we definitely have to ask Zach about next Wednesday.
make a note. We need to talk to Zach next week about Mifepristone. We need to ask him about the Idaho case, and we need to ask him about the Starbucks case. I think we just wrote the segment for us. We don't have to do any work. Oh, by the way, we should mention this. Since we just talked about. Zach.
Yeah.
Zach is going to be joining us, folks, in like 10 days. Zach and Joel Griffith are going to be here June 25th, St. Charles Funny Bone. Chris and I are both going to be there. The streets of St. Charles, sponsored by West News Magazine and Mid Rivers News Magazine and the St. Louis Young Republicans. We would love to have you join us. Please, tickets are going really fast. I just checked with Jeff Allen today. He said tickets are going fast. Make sure you jump on newstalkstl.com. You can order a bunch of tickets, and they're free. I think you can maybe get up to four at one time, and we would love for you to join us. We're all going to be there. Joey's. Are we letting you out of the studio for that, or what's the plan?
Yeah, I'm going to do a tight five before we go on, of course.
Nice. Very good. Larry Connors will be there, and I think he's buying everybody drinks at Angel 3 afterwards.
Right.
So join us for that event indeed.
If there aren't enough seats, I hear that Joey will let folks sit on his lap a half hour at a time.
He does. He always takes one for the team. Mm-hmm. Chris, we've got a ton to talk to Steve Bucci about, so let's step aside briefly for that. When we come back, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation with a focus on cybersecurity and military special ops. Boy, do we have a lot of military-related international relations, southern border questions asked Steve Bucci. Stand by. We'll talk to him next here at 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Tonight, a brazen display of Russian military force just over 100 miles from Florida's coast. Russia's longtime ally, Cuba, welcoming four Russian warships, including a nuclear-powered submarine with a 21-cannon salute. As Russian military drills begin in the Caribbean nation for the first time in 16 years, the Russians say the ships have already conducted drills in the Atlantic, simulating long-range missile strikes aimed at targets more than 300 miles away.
Welcome home to News Talk STL and the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. It is 4:26, and you hear those reports there that Russia is conducting military drills 90 miles from our coast. Boy, does that sound familiar? Mm. Let's talk to our next guest about it.
Steve Bucci, visiting fellow for special ops at the Heritage Foundation.
Oh, yes. What were you about to ask me?
Do you expect me to talk?
Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Oh, it's good to be back, and I apologize for missing out last week.
Oh, that's fine. The wife takes precedence over the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. We understand. Steve, tell me, we're hearing these reports about Russia 90 miles off of our coast. Is this just saber rattling, or should Americans be concerned about this?
No, this is saber rattling, clearly. You know, frankly, I'm surprised some of those Russian vessels made it across the Atlantic and went into port in Cuba, given they're not doing too well with their Navy in you know, off the coast of Ukraine. So they have issues. They really do not have a global Navy anymore like they did at one time. They've never had one like us. And our Navy is, without a doubt, shadowing them very closely, watching everything they do, probably gathering some good intel on them through the kind of intelligence gathering that gets technical data from other people's equipment. So, you know, we never want to take it for granted. We don't like the Russians coming into the Western Hemisphere and doing this sort of thing. But, you know, they've got an ally in the Western Hemisphere. And there's not a heck of a lot we can do about that. We don't blockade Cuba anymore. So we really can't stop the Russians from doing this short of, you know, us starting the war. And I don't think we want to do that. But this is, you know, it's serious for our Navy to pay attention to, for our intel people to track them very closely. But this is not a big change in Russian policy or Russia's stance towards the United States. This is Putin flexing his muscles. He's kind of doing that thing that The Rock does with his chest, you know, bouncing him up and down. It's about as threatening as that. You know, it's interesting to watch, but you're not that impressed.
Steve Bucci, WWE fan. Who would have ever known?
Absolutely. Got to smell what The Rock's cooking. Steve, I want to do a little follow-up on this. You know, it's fascinating. I'm trying to figure out, you know, if the truth is one or the other or somewhere in between. It's amazing if you look at all the different media reports on this. The center-left national corporate media is acting like this is nothing to be worried about at all. It's not even anything we should even be talking about. And then you look at the center-right media, Fox, Newsmax, other media like that, and they're like, yeah, you know, we're not in danger of World War III, but it's something to be concerned about. And Steve, I know you do public policy, not politics, but I just wonder if there was a Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, Donald Trump type president in the White House, would they even be doing this, or would they be not so bold? What do you think about that?
I'm not the political guy, but I will give you Bucci's opinion on it.
I'd love it.
I don't think they would be doing this if there was a different president in the White House right now. But, you know, Joe Biden doesn't scare anybody. He's not, you know, not that he needs to scare people, but they should at least respect him and respect when he says, hey, don't do this, that they shouldn't do it. And that hasn't worked with any of our adversaries or competitors since Biden became president. So, no. This does have a lot to do with who's in the White House. The way this administration has been conducting foreign policy is kind of weak. And, you know, that leads adversaries to stretch things a little, see what they can get away with. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean Russia is going to, you know, suddenly on their way out, start launching nukes at the, you know, southeast of the United States. But we really don't like people just trampling in our yard. But when you don't project a you know, an aura of deterrence, and Joe Biden doesn't, people get a little bit you know, froggy, and they, you know, they're going to push back on us.
Speaking with Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. You can reach him on X at S Bucci. Steve, there is a peace deal on the table. Hamas, or Israel, has accepted it. The United States has accepted it. Hamas has told their Arab mediators that they want Israeli forces to withdraw from territory along Egypt by the end of the first week after a deal is signed, and to completely withdraw from Gaza and announce a permanent ceasefire before the group releases additional hostages in a second phase. Will Israel ever accept this deal?
I would seriously doubt it. You know, they've had a lot of pressure put on them by the Biden administration, the United States being their most, you know, close ally and friend and supplier. Biden, you know, he's a little confusing because one day he says, yeah, I'm behind Israel 110%. And then like 3 hours later, he says, oh, we're cutting off offensive weapons to them. Okay, that's not 110%, Joe. So it is confusing, but the international community is more against Israel now than at any time since I've been following these things, and that's a good 50 years now. They really, you know, they're putting all the blame on Israel, and it seems like they've totally forgotten who started this war and the kind of terrorist and horrific activities that went on the 7th of October, which, frankly, if that had happened with a group on the border of almost any other country in the world, nobody would be questioning the legitimacy of a reaction by the aggrieved party, in this case Israel, and my hypothetical, whoever the other country is. Nobody would be giving them any grief about it at all. In fact, they'd probably be applauding and offering their help to go in and root out this nest of vipers. But that's not what's happening now. And what's really sad is watching all the stuff that's going on around the world, even in our own country. You know, this garbage that happened in the New York City area, where people went on to the subways and threatened Jews on the subway, saying, you know, where are the Zionists? You know, show yourself. And then when nobody did, they said, okay, there's nobody here. So I don't know if there were any Jewish people on that train, but they were silenced because of this physical threat. Those people should be rounded up, thrown in jail, and if they're not American citizens, deported. But that's not what's happening. So, you know, Israel is watching that. That affects their decision making. But I don't think Benjamin Netanyahu is going to back off an inch. He knows he has to destroy Hamas. If he doesn't do it now, he's going to be facing another October 7th coming up in the future, probably in the near future. And he is determined not to allow that to happen again. And I believe the majority of Israelis are with him on that. What our legacy press doesn't point out is that a lot of the protests in Israel right now are not aimed at making Netanyahu back off. It's they think Netanyahu's not being tough enough, and that doesn't play well here. So they just conveniently leave that little twist out. But look, they've got a bunch of hostages, a bunch of American hostages, mm-hmm. we're in the same. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting there going, okay, well, Israel should pull everybody out of Gaza and promise to never go back, and then Hamas will release more hostages. That is the most inane negotiating position I've ever heard of. No country in the world would accept that, and I don't think Israel will either.
Mm-hmm. Steve, speaking of Benjamin Netanyahu, congressional leaders have invited him to deliver an address at the Capitol in the near future. And, you know, back in the old days, maybe not that long ago, that would be considered a show of wartime support for one of our most important, especially in the Middle East, and longest standing allies around the globe. Unfortunately, Steve, everything has to be partisan these days, and there are high ranking Democratic congressional leaders signaling that, well, they're just not going to attend the address. I mean, Steve, is this important for Netanyahu to come to the United States, deliver this address, maybe reset the entire apple cart on and remind these yahoos, you know, the importance of this relationship, what it's all about, and that it needs to not be a political talking point by, you know, kids on college campuses?
I agree. I think Netanyahu understands, and I think Speaker Johnson understands, this is a critical time in our relationship with Israel, and we need to show them the support they deserve, not this tepid on again, off again, oh, we're not sure, gee, you're being too tough on these people. You know, people pointed out when Israel went in last weekend and rescued those four hostages, said, oh my goodness, they rescued four hostages, that's great, but oh gee, they killed 200 people, and those were all civilians. First of all, that's a bloody lie. Mm-hmm. They weren't all civilians, and there are video after video showing people in civilian clothing coming up out of tunnel holes with rocket-propelled grenade launchers, with AK-47s engaging the Israeli forces that were doing that rescue mission. And at that point, they're combatants. They have totally opened up all of the legalities for Israel to engage them with prejudice and to kill every one of them that resisted that rescue operation. But people are still all, couldn't they have done it with, you know, less loss of life? Shouldn't they have given a warning first?
Mm-hmm.
No and no. that I thought that was an incredibly precise operation. You know, as a special operator, I was pretty darned impressed with what they did, and that they only had 200 casualties who were not all innocent civilians. I'm not saying there were no collateral casualties. I'm sure there were. But, you know, when your enemy builds its nests in and around their own families and the civilians on purpose, deliberately to try and deter Israel from responding at all, but then knowing, well, you know, even if they kill some of our civilians, it'll be really good propaganda for us. That's a sick attitude. And I'm sorry, Hamas are a bunch of savages, and they deserve to be exterminated at this point. And doing any sort of, you know, moderation of that, or trying to force Israel to use more moderation, is wrong and wrongheaded. And Israel should continue doing what its leaders determine are in the best national interests of the Israeli people.
Speaking with Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Speaking of Hamas being savages, Steve, you're absolutely right. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal last week talking about the leader of Hamas, how he was praising these people that have been martyred or killed because of their actions, these innocent civilians. And they even told a story in there where this guy's second lieutenant, three of his sons were killed in a air attack by Israel. And he told this guy that your sons are going to be in paradise and they're going to be martyrs and everything. So these are some sick folks. Speaking of Wall Street Journal, I read an article last week that was kind of disturbing. The headline was "Allies Warn Former Fighter Pilots Not to Train Chinese Military Members." China is trying to step up recruitment of Western-trained fighter pilots to improve its air combat capability. This is disturbing. What do you know about this, Steve?
That's sort of a new thing. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, there's fighter pilots from Western nations, you know, all over the place. Some of them have retired. Some of them, their militaries, you know, don't pay very much anyway. And these guys have skills and, you know, they're looking for work. Well, the Chinese are really masters at pushing a story that looks as benign as they can make it. And many times it's not until after you get involved in one of these things do you realize, holy smoke, this is the Chinese military that I'm training, the enemies of my own country. Unfortunately, some people, that doesn't stop them. They keep going. They conduct the training because the pay is great. But it's not something they should be doing. There's rules about that for people that are former military. You sign certain non-disclosure agreements with your own military when you leave, that you're not going to share that kind of information or skill. Because trust me, if the Chinese get fighter pilots, like somebody that's flown an F-35, for instance, they get them in there, they don't want them there just to train their pilots. They want them in there so they can milk them for intel on those systems so that they can, you know, make their own, or at least know how to counter the Western versions of it. So people who get involved in that, they're breaking a bunch of rules, and they need to stop, back off, report it to their national security folks, be it the FBI in America or whatever the equivalent is in their country, because they are being used as dupes by the Chinese intel as well as the Chinese military.
Speaking to Steve Bucci of the Heritage Foundation. Steve, some very disturbing news. It seems like there's very disturbing news every day about our southern border. Most recently, we learned that actual terrorists on the actual terrorist watch list were allowed through our southern border. They were vetted by our federal government, and then they were released until they were then recaptured by an FBI sting operation. Steve, the White House is parading around like this is some sort of victory for them. I think most Americans, though, are terrified, wondering how many people have not been caught who are still running around. Is this a serious matter, and how widespread do you think it is, or do we even have any idea?
Well, it is a very serious matter. It is way more widespread than anybody likes to admit. Whenever you hear, you know, the administration officials and they talk about, well, you know, at X million people came in, you know, through the borders, were processed, have their appointment for their immigration hearing 10 years from now. That's not hyperbole, by the way. That's some of them have appointments 10 years in the future. But then they say, and there's a significant number of gotaways, right? The people that went through or did not go through the official border crossing sites just came into the country, and we know nothing about them. So think about that. If these guys went through the official border crossing, were vetted, and then released, and now we figure out they're actually ISIS operatives, the really bad guys are not going to go through the official spot. They're going to go through someplace in between where they know they're not going to get caught on the border. There are significant numbers of those people in here. Not every person that does that is an ISIS, or an Iranian spy. But you know what? It was only a couple of dozen people pulled off 9/11 in this country. Mm-hmm. So you don't need thousands and thousands of these guys to get in to cause a lot of problems for our country. And I can tell you, there's definitely hundreds and hundreds of them in here at least. And anybody who says that's not significant is either lying to themselves or really stupid and lying to you.
Finally, Steve, Senator Roger Wicker, the ranking member on the Armed Services Committee, he plans to propose U.S. defense spending rise to 5% of the economy in 5 to 7 years. That's Cold War, end of Cold War level of spending. Even if he was able to get that level of spending, do we have the industrial capacity to handle all of that?
To be honest with you, no. I mean, we could do a lot. A lot of that money could be used for training, and readiness issues. But when you're talking about recapitalizing the military, buying more ships, buying more aircraft and submarines, that takes somebody to build those things. And, you know, I always use it as an example because I'm an Army guy. I don't know if your listeners realize it, but there's only one factory in the United States of America that builds tanks. Mm. One. And it's only got so much capacity. There are two shipyards that can build submarines and certain other military naval vessels. That's not many. The kind of skilled labor that is required for all those type things are not, you know, some of them are older than me, you know, and I'm going to be 69 here in a couple of weeks. And they're not working anymore. And they weren't replaced because nobody was, you know, funding that assembly line enough to keep those kind of workers or to really go out and recruit new ones. So, yeah, you're right. Our defense industrial base right now can keep us at the level we're at. Maybe they could go up a little and still be able to produce. But if you're talking about an upgrade from the 2.5-3% we spend now to 5%, I don't think you're going to get quite the big boom that the senator is hoping for. It would take a lot of investment, not just the DOD budget, but somebody's got to invest in that industrial base, and that's just not happening right now.
We've been speaking with Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Steve, we always love speaking with you every Thursday, but it's always bad news, gloom and doom, and the world's on fire. We've got to find some happy topics to end the segment with.
Pink fluffy unicorns, as my daughters would say.
Yeah. Something. We need a
little. No, we don't need any unicorns, man. We have good young people. I have to tell you that. Not every, there's a lot of knuckleheads right out there, but there's always a lot of knuckleheads. But we have a lot of really good ones. That's our biggest capital treasure, and we need to leverage that. But you got to supply those kids. You got to train them, and you got to make sure that they have everything they need to protect the country, or no matter how good they are, they'll fail.
That's Steve Bucci. You can read more of his wisdom at heritage.org or on X, S. Bucci. Steve, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next Thursday.
Sounds good. Take care and have a great week.
Thanks, guys. You too. Or thanks, Steve. Excuse me. I'm not going anywhere, am I? Chris's Corner up next. We'll talk about Biden, some polls, yes, some political news. Listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
So I just want to thank the Republican Senate, and I want to thank also the House. We met, as you know, with the full House, Republican House, today, and we had a tremendous meeting with them also, and there's great unity. Very similar, different topics, actually, but not that different, and there's one thing in common. We want to make America great again. We want to make our country great again.
4:52 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Mm-hmm. The president, of course, met with congressional leaders today. And I believe the president, there is a lot of unity in the party right now. Those that were never Trumpers and not big supporters of Trump have come on board and endorsed them, including Mitch McConnell and others. The Democrats, on the other hand, not so good. Let's talk about it, Joey.
Mm-hmm. Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
And you know, usually what happens when you have great party unity, that gives you the opportunity to expand your voters to your party, to voters that might not necessarily agree with you. The latest New York Times Siena College poll of likely voters has President Biden with just a 2-point lead over Donald Trump, which is horrible. But here is a poll. Here's a poll if you are a political junkie or a longtime follower of politics. This, I hope you're sitting down or don't drive off the road, because this was surprising even to me. Yeah. A recent Quinnipiac University survey shows Trump ahead by a point among registered voters between 18 and 34. Whoa. Let me read that again. A Quinnipiac University survey shows Trump ahead by a point among registered voters between 18 and 34.
Remarkable.
Exit polling showed Biden won the 18 to 29-year-old vote by 24 points in 2020. Hillary Clinton won it by 19 points in 2016. This recent Quinnipiac University poll shows Biden ahead by 1 point. That shows you just how bad Joe Biden and the Democrats are doing among young people. To help improve that, a group of Democratic donors, they are devising new ways to reach young voters. The group is led by Investing in U.S., a liberal group. Here's what they'll do, Tim. They're going to, sometimes they'll have free beer, manicures, boot shines, and rent check sweepstakes.
Whoa! Wow.
A handout of contraceptive pills or cooling towels. All you have to do is show up like it's Super Bowl Sunday and belong to something bigger. Oh, and someone might mention voting at some point. If the early event shows some success, the group may expand its reach in the fall. So, wow. Cooling towels, free beer, and contraceptive pills. That's what's going to get you the youth vote, I guess. Washington Post has a story that the Biden campaign is pouring massive resources into a field operation in Wisconsin, which, of course, is one of the big battleground states. They are pouring in this effort because they need to win over white voters without a college degree, a critical demographic in this battleground state. Biden is losing the white male non-college educated vote, as we know. We also know that he is losing the African-American vote as well. Senator Tim Kaine, he has urged the Biden campaign to reconsider nixing a proposed debate at Virginia State University. That would be the first ever at a historically black college. Of course, those debates were put on by the Presidential Commission, which both President Trump and Biden have rejected. But Tim Kaine knows they need the black vote. You need to have that debate at that historically black college. Mm-hmm. And finally, Tim, I think the Biden administration knows that the handwriting is on the wall, and there's a very good opportunity that they may lose. Back in April, federal agencies rolled out 66 significant rules the most of any month since Ronald Reagan's administration. The rules that recently include taking aim at power plant pollution, vehicle emissions, making airlines pay customers back for delays, banning non-compete agreements, expanding overtime pay, slashing credit card fees, pushing big companies to be transparent about climate change, protecting abortion providers and seekers from investigation, cracking down on the product of the USA labels for beef, and letting dreamers access Obamacare. Those are 66 rules that they're going to put into the National Register because they think when President Trump comes in, he'll reverse all of those things. That is Chris's Corner. We've got the speaker stump speech at 5:07.
That's Chris is going to be an ode to Vic Porcelli's Edstoit.
And at 5:24, we'll speak with Krista Gall, member of the Herzog Foundation and host of the podcast Making the Leap. We'll talk about him and his conversations with actor Kirk Cameron. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, Soros Free Radio.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.